Tonight, our nation is in debt to the people of Boston and the people of Massachusetts. After a vicious attack on their city, Bostonians responded with resolve and determination. They did their part as citizens and partners in this investigation. Boston police and state police and local police across the Commonwealth of Massachusetts responded with professionalism and bravery over five long days. And tonight, because of their determined efforts, we've closed an important chapter in this tragedy. I've been briefed earlier this evening by FBI Director Mueller. After the attacks on Monday, I directed the full resources of the federal government to be made available to help state and local authorities in the investigation and to increase security as needed. And over the past week, close coordination among federal, state, and local officials, sharing information, moving swiftly to track down leads, has been critical to this effort. They all worked as they should. Obviously, tonight there are still many unanswered questions. Among them, why did young men who grew up and studied here as part of our communities and our country resort to such violence? How did they plan and carry out these attacks, and did they receive any help? The families of those killed so senselessly deserve answers. The wounded, some of whom now have to learn how to stand and walk and live again, deserve answers. And so I've instructed the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security and our intelligence community to continue to deploy all the necessary resources to support the investigation, to collect intelligence, and to protect our citizens.
Awesome. They did a great job of locking down the city. I've never seen any city do that before. I've never seen so many law enforcement in my life. Anywhere I live right over here. It was crazy last night, and I'm happy I can go to bed tonight.
America, we stand. We got God bless America. Nobody can mess with us.
It's been really difficult to just breathe. You know, it's far enough down, but it's still right there, and you don't know who else is going to get hurt, and that's what you always worry about.
I think it's a feeling of relief and gladness and happy for all those who are involved.
This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead. It's Monday, April the 22nd, exactly a week since all hell broke loose in the city of Boston after two homemade bombs exploded near the finishing line of the Boston Marathon, killing three, wounding more than 180 people, most of them spectators at the world-famous event. 3 days after the bombings, the FBI released images of two men, later identified as brothers Tamerlan Tsarnaev, 26, and 19-year-old Zohar, they said, were prime suspects. A massive search was underway in the Boston area, officials said, warning the public that the men were armed and dangerous that same night. On Thursday, the brothers were linked to the shooting death of an MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology police officer, in his patrol car. Police said they allegedly carjacked a black Mercedes four-wheel drive and released the owner unharmed at a filling station. The car owner's cell phone was still in the car, and the Mercedes was tracked to Watertown, a suburb about 8 miles west of central Boston. Early Friday morning, at about 1 o'clock, the brothers and a small army of police and SWAT team agents traded more than 200 bullets in a fierce shootout in Watertown. The brothers even threw explosives at them, police said. When the smoke cleared, the older brother, Tarmilan, was seriously wounded, as was a police officer. Both were taken to Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, where Tarmilan died of multiple traumatic injuries. The officer is in serious condition, but recuperating. Zohar, however, managed to escape. The city was shut down, and residents were told to stay at home and not open their doors. Governor Deval Patrick lifted the stay-inside order around 6:15 p.m. and also ordered the resumption of public transportation. But 45 minutes later, gunshots are heard again in Watertown, and police again ask residents to stay inside and not open their doors. A homeowner walking his dog noticed a trail of blood leading to his boat, which he had shrink-wrapped and stored on a trailer behind his house for the winter. He alerted police. Zohar, weak and bleeding profusely from gunshot wounds, was captured and taken for treatment to the same hospital in which his brother died and 54 victims of the bombings and the wounded police officer remain. With the news of his capture, the city of Boston breathed a sigh of relief. We just heard the president formally announce that, and the jubilation of folk in the community. But now come the questions. Following our initial discussions into the situation, what questions should we be asking? And this is where you come in at 888-874-4888. What questions should we be asking? I believe that there are many, to quote the president himself, this event, tragic as it was for any discerning person a teachable moment for America and for the Obama administration in particular. What was it supposed to teach? I know for one thing, as I await your calls at 888-874-4888, it certainly, well, I'm not a professional in this area, but I would guess that the country should be embarrassed that despite all of the information that we are given about how prepared we are to combat terrorism, two guys with homemade bombs, one of whom allegedly was known to the government at least 2 and maybe even 3 years ago, managed to shut down an entire city for 5 days. Of course, everybody should be happy that it was brought to an end. Their violence was brought to an end, and their deadly intent was brought to an end. Of course, there is to be relief on the part of the citizens that this scenario just did not continue to inflict more terror on unsuspecting people. But think about it. Two people brought the entire city and its and several of its surrounding towns. It brought metropolitan Boston to a halt. Now, you could only imagine what would really have happened had there been a full, all-out assault. If two guys basically shut down a town, nobody could go anywhere, no public transportation is cut off, and you can't go to work, you can't come from work, you can't go to school. An entire city grinds to a halt. In today's America, post 9/11, when all these resources were directed at making these metropolitan areas, especially since they were to be the likely targets of terroristic activities, that it could bring life literally to a halt. That says something. That says something rather deep. And I think that's the first question that needs to be asked. Are we, in fact, is the country, in fact, prepared? Now, nobody, the nature of terrorism is the element of surprise. The idea is to inflict as much damage as possible with no warning, so that it increases the terror quotient. You know, you really are scared because now you don't know what is next, whether this is the only attack or is this the first in a series of attacks. And we find, and I'm sure, I mean, they did really, I am not condemning, understand, I'm not condemning the police, I'm not condemning the SWAT teams or anything like that, but I am making the observation as to the state of readiness of a major city to cope with terrorism, even by just two guys, just two. And they shut down the whole city for 5 days. I think that is incredible. And I think it says something about the state of readiness. It says something about the coordination of effort. It says something about the assumption that nothing like this would ever happen. And caught off guard, I mean, it says maybe we need to have always, we should have a signed kind of agreement that if you're going to attack the United States, could you please give us a couple of months, you know, heads up so we could kind of get ourselves ready. I looked at that and that scared me more than anything else. That yes, the attack occurred. Yes, it was horrible, inexcusable, and downright stupid. It's just stupid. But I looked at the fact that an entire week went by, and a major city like Boston was out of commission for an entire week. Wow. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's hear what you're thinking. I got a lot of emails, a lot of opinions from people who said, these are some of the things that we should be thinking. I'll go to those in a minute. But I want to know what you are thinking out there. What if you had to say something to the president today, or if you had to address this issue today, what would you say were the critical issues that you would want to put on the table as high priority items? This is your time to talk. We've been discussing this issue from a journalistic perspective, and we can get into that as well, because there are so many things that happened here. The shift of tone. Clearly, they knew. Somebody had seen the images of these young men before they were, before they actually released them. And clearly there was an issue because the observation might have been, well, they're supposed to look different. But they didn't look different, did they? You know, you look at how the government sometimes gets caught in its own tracks, you know, of racism. You know, they cannot, you cannot help but understand that they're dealing with issues as well that we would not be privy to, but we know that they're thinking about them because we know how this works. Hello, Sarah, you on the air?
Greetings to you, Utrice.
Thank you. You too.
Well, Utrice, this is you said a mouthful, but this topic here with these young men. First of all, Utrice, I'm still not quite feeling it that these two young boys, who seem like such inept amateurs, that they were the mastermind behind this scheme. It seems to me that there were other people, much more professionals, who orchestrated it, and these were the two patsies that are being put out here to us for us to believe that these two men actually did that, cause a whole city to be put on lockdown, and for the United States to show her force, to show that, hey, this is what we have. It looked like a major battlefield a little bit that I was able to look at, to see these police officers dressed like soldiers, armored vehicle, the whole nine yards out here conducting this house-to-house search. And it really wasn't them who found the man. It was the neighbor taking a smoke that found the blood stains and, you know, found the young boy that was hurt in his boat.
Well, you know, I'm still thinking, why would it take 5 days?
Exactly.
While it looks to us, it looks to us as civilians, this looks to us as very impressive. I mean, we saw all these different vehicles and the specialty vehicles that they have and the people. I mean, they went into action and they cornered their guy eventually. Okay. But considering that after 9/11 and even leading into 9/11, this supposed war on terror was funded adequately to get the kinds of response, and the agencies who were faulted for not talking to each other early enough, and all this coordination was supposed to happen sooner than it did. Mm-hmm. What took 5 days? I mean, if I could tell you, in some countries, this would have been cut much shorter than the 5 days that it took.
Exactly. So, Utrice. You see, what I'm seeing here, Utrice, is that with the advent of Homeland Security, which is sucking up a lot of these smaller agencies because ATF is now a part of Homeland Security, they're moving a lot of these standalone agencies. They have now been absorbed into this great big behemoth that Homeland Security has become. These people like the FBI and these other intel agencies, I am seeing that there is a bit of jockeying for position going on, that they want to still maintain their relevancy. So information of vital importance is not being turned over because they don't want to have them. The FBI have carried themselves with this prestige upon themselves for so many years that that now with Homeland Security, they're jockeying for that post with them. So I believe that they are playing, this rivalry is going on, and they are, and at our expense, our safety is being put at risk while they're jockeying to see who's going to be top dog.
Well, thank you, Sarah. You got the conversation started today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Willie from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, sister. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
You're doing an excellent job. I love your program.
Thank you so much.
Listen, you know, I really haven't paid much attention to it, Eutrice, because I tell you why. You know, when you hear the media start beating their drums, their war drums, it simply means one thing. Somebody is going to be destroyed. Maybe Iraq, I mean, not Iran or North Korea. And that's, you know, what they're saying about that thing. People did get hurt, but it's more than that they're telling us. You know, because I remember 9/11, the, you know, where that went and what they did when they did that. The I forgot the document that Dick Cheney and Bush and all of them, they were co-signers of that document. Remember that document that they signed? That there has to be something drastic in America to win the support of the American people?
Oh, no. I'm not.
Yeah, well, there was a document signed by all of them, Richard Pearl, all of those guys. That was a legitimate document, that they, all of them. And then we had 9/11. So, you know, I'm thinking this may be something of that nature, you know. It's sad that American, you know, the American people wouldn't believe that their government will do these things, but they would. You know, for you know, remember Vietnam, that was a lie. Iraq was a lie. You know, and they do anything to maintain global domination of peoples and their resources, that's all.
But in the meantime, we do have two guys who did really, allegedly, I have to say allegedly, because it's not been proven yet, but we do have two people who allegedly did a really horrible thing.
This is what they're saying. We don't know that yet.
Yes,
Geronimo Pratt spent 28 years in jail for a crime he did not commit. Mumia, same thing. So these guys, they don't have to do anything. We know this government. It has a record, Eutrice. We have to look at the record. You see, because your records say who you really are. When you go to the doctor, sometimes they don't even look at you. They're busy looking at the record. When you go to court, they're looking at your record. So we know the record of this so-called government.
So you are in doubt as to whether these two guys, really these two brothers, whether they in fact did do this act?
I don't know.
You are in doubt of that?
Absolutely. You see, it is, we know what we most, the way I look at it, right, and from what I've learned from people like you, Dr. Ben Clark, Minister Farrakhan Malcolm, we know we do not have a government in Washington. It's a crime syndicate. The mafia is kindergarten stuff compared to these guys. There's no level too low for them to stoop or go. You see what I'm saying? So I wouldn't be surprised if these guys have nothing to do with it.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway,
Molly,
you have a nice day, honey.
Thank you.
And thank you for being you.
Thank you so much. All right. Well, we have two really interesting points of view on the table so far. And both of them lean toward doubting the government. And I don't know. What do you think? 888-874-4888. Now, in the middle of all of this, I am inclined to believe that there is some degree that there is involvement, that the two brothers are involved, and the two brothers very well might be the prime suspect. We'll still have to see. We still have to see. But I look at initially not just the act that they allegedly committed. I look at the response and how long it took to gather up a credible response to the act. That is what is concerning me more than anything else, because everything else will come later. We'll find out, and the questions will be asked, and the whole process will take place because now so many eyes are on it. I'm still stuck at the fact that all this time that the government has assured its citizens that there's no reason to be overwhelmingly despairing of anything because there is a cogent response to this thing called terrorism, especially in light of 9/11. Two guys shut down a major city for 5 days. And they were clearly not professionals. Clara from Philadelphia, hello.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good to talk with you. I wanted to follow up particularly on the comments of the last caller. His questioning of this whole situation, whether or not those two people were the primary perpetrators. Because I heard the other day, in connection with this, I heard the other day that the person who was accused of doing the Sandy Hook shootings died the day before. Have you heard that? There's a birth certificate. I've heard that on two. I heard it on the Maria Heller show, and then I heard it on Coast to Coast AM. And these people were not presenting it as major, as firsthand news. They had just heard it. They knew it. These are people who investigate things thoroughly. So anything, and I agree, anything we're told has to be taken with a grain of salt. This, I think, it might be a distraction from the horrors of the cuts. That's the way I see it. I mean, it could be anything that's really important, just another distraction.
Now, you really believe that two bombs that claimed three lives, four, including the police officer who later was shot to death, and close to 180 or even more people wounded, that was a ruse to divert attention?
Wouldn't be the first time. 9/11. The day after 9/11, after I'd recovered somewhat from my shock, I thought, who has the most to gain from this? The day after, the Bush administration and the Israelis. I'm not saying that I was right on who did it, but I was right that it wasn't as presented at all. I think it's a distraction perpetrated by criminals, in agreement with the last caller.
You do?
Yes, I believe it.
And what would have to happen in order for you to change your mind?
Oh, what would have to happen? How could they? Mm-hmm. It's hard for them to prove they did, that it's not a hoax. You know what? I don't know what could be done to change my mind, but certain things could be done to change my opinion.
What would it take to change your opinion?
Oh. What would it take to change my opinion would be, instead of issuing presidential orders about guns, you issue presidential orders about restoration of homes to people, helping students with their loans. Refraining from dabbling and possibly possibly destroying Social Security, ending these wars. They have a lot to do.
Well, thank you, Clara. I appreciate your view. We'll see how people react to it. I think this is a good way to get the dialogue going.
Okay.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Well, so far, we've had three calls, and all three, we're batting 100% in the skepticism category. All three are skeptical. I'm kind of stunned at it. Is there no credibility about the fact that it is exactly what people say it is, that you have two guys who came up with a plan, whoever hatched the plan, but they allegedly were the ones who carried it out, and the ones who carried it out were the ones who eventually were made to pay for the crime so far. Now, is it possible that that is the truth? What would it take for you to believe that it's the truth? And this is a very interesting thing, that people are doubting the word of the government to this degree. I happen to believe that they are connected. I believe that they in fact might have been the ones who did it. Of course, as you know, I always say there's hardly anything that is one-dimensional. There are all these different dimensions to it, and we will get to that. But let me hear about your questions today at 888-874-4888. Alan from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice.
Hello.
How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Well, I just tuned in, and unfortunately I had some things to do, but I believe you might be talking about 9/11.
No, we're talking about the Boston bombings and what questions it raises.
Okay. I'd like to go back to 9/11 for a second because I'm taking a risk by saying this over the air, but I think Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Bush and others that I have no idea who right now. And then I'd like to jump over to what Gary's guest today, Vandana Shiva,
yes,
was talking about Monsanto being the highest, what's the word? Like when people take over?
Oh, monopoly?
Yeah, well, something like that. Dictatorship. The biggest, highest, most powerful dictatorship this world has ever seen. Now, I feel a little, my feelings go out to the 19-year-old. I believe that he might have been talked into it.
You think he might have been talked into it?
He might have, you know, I have no idea what his brother told him. But at 19, I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical about the whole situation, how the Boston attack took place, then they had an explosion in Texas, then they had lysine, I think it's called, measured the mail to the president, and he put up a two-block barricade around the White House.
Ricin.
Now, I heard stories that this fellow's wife was saying that this guy was totally incapable of formulating an end product of the quality that they supposedly found.
Oh, you're talking about the alleged bomber, the one who died, the older brother?
Right. No, the lysine that was mailed to some people in Washington.
Oh, I see. Yes.
They supposedly caught this guy right away, but I heard his wife said that he's totally incapable of making such a product. So this, you know, I'll tell you the God's honest truth the way I feel. You know, we don't know what happened with Kennedy. We don't know what happened with Martin Luther. There's so many things that are that the citizens of this world are left in the dark about. And I don't know. Everything seems very suspicious to me.
So we're batting 4-for-4? What's going on here? Well, thank you. Thank you. You two are skeptical.
After listening to Diana Shiva and this Gary Noll show, I don't know how many of your listeners listen. One of the things also that I might spit out while I have you on the phone is that a few days ago you said something about expanding the listenership.
And, yes.
It's a great program, and it's a good time for certain people, but I think that maybe the people that do listen to Gary at 12 o'clock, maybe on their lunch breaks and this and that, and maybe, you know, you could raise your listenership if you might change it might be convenient for you to be on the air at 1 o'clock, but I feel a lot of people probably have to go back to work at 1, you know. Of course, you usually get lunch from 12 to 1.
I responded to a listener. I've gotten quite a few pieces of feedback like that. So I'm thinking.
Okay.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for.
I have so much to say, but so little time. But there's just a big question mark. That's what I like to say. There's a big question mark on so many things.
All right. Thank you. Well, look, this is a bit stunning. I mean, this is just the thinking of people, and I'm amazed that we're batting 4-for-4. John from Boston, what do you have to say?
Hi, listen, you've got a fantastic program. I listen to it as often as I can, which isn't that often, but heck, it's really good. I have my own take on this whole mess. It's difficult to prevent this sort of thing. Somebody's really dedicated to try to hurt somebody else. It's very difficult to stop them, especially if they have a half a brain in their head. However, having said that, if you take a long-term view and try to analyze people trying to hurt you, usually they're pretty damn rational. They will probably react in a very rational way. They're responding to something, that cause and effect. Excuse me. If we want people to stop hurting us as Americans, very simple. We have to stop hurting them. We have the dumbest foreign policy of probably any large nation on this planet. We go out of our way to hurt people. We kill people. We've been murdering people for the last, who knows, I don't know, 100 years, 200 years, who the hell knows. But the presently, for example, just a little thing, a small item in terms of calculation on a foreign policy. With this whole drone program, I don't know, what do we kill? Supposedly one terrorist out of every 15 to 20? I mean, my God, if I was a non-belligerent sitting somewhere, minding my own business, and my wife get killed, or my son get killed because of some aerodynamic thing from the sky coming from a country, I would probably be hell-bent on hurting the people in that country. Now, I would draw a line. I certainly would not want to hurt anybody individually who did not hurt me. But, you know, that's attributing past a little too much, morality on the part of these terrorists. A lot of them are very, very dedicated. They just, they're filled with hatred. If after your friends, relatives, parents, mothers, sisters, whatever, have been hurt, you're going to lash out like a snake. And, you know, I'm not saying I can't blame you. I'm saying that if we really want to get to the root of this thing over the long term, we have to be smart, not stupid. Right now, we're stupid. We have, as I said, a morally bankrupt foreign policy. A bunch of damn politicians in Boston, not in Boston, in Washington, who have been bought off by the corporations, by the big money. And the average American, I feel sorry for him. He's been dumbed down over the last 15 years. It's just a pathetic situation. I don't know what to do. We get no choices in our elections. In fact, the last crucial election, really crucial election, when Barack Obama got elected, there was really only one candidate that I can remember who was really worth anything, and that was Dennis Kucinich from Cleveland. The press, of course, as part of this whole conglomerate of conspiracy, I'm not going to call it conspiracy. The press, they trivialized him, they marginalized him, and ultimately they just excluded him. And the only people who were left were what? Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. That's a prescription for disaster. Barack Obama at that time was basically more or less an unknown, but he didn't always say anything. He didn't promise a whole heck of a lot, and he's gone back on anything that he promised anyway. Personally, I think the guy's a disaster.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, John. Thank you so much for your contribution today. I'm sure people will be reacting to it. Thank you so much. Wayne from New Jersey, you're on the air. Hello, Wayne. Wayne is not there. John from Oregon.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
How are you?
First of all,
I wanted to make a comment about the music that you play.
Yes.
You have marvelous taste in jazz.
Oh, thank you. I am a music nut.
Is it from your own collection?
No. Some friends have sent me things, and I have some of it is from my own collection.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've just always enjoyed your taste in jazz. It's delightful. Anyway, let me get on to it. I'm going to join the bandwagon and say there definitely is a conspiracy and a cover-up going on. It's the same sort of thing that's been happening since at least the Kennedy assassination, where all of the people who could provide key direct information and knowledge are blown away immediately. And here again, we have the police blowing away one of the two suspects immediately. The other one is in serious condition in the hospital, and they're using that as a reason, as a pretense for why they're not questioning him and releasing any information. And I think it's just, there's a good chance that these two young men did this. Why they did it and under what provocation is a big question to me. And I think we're just looking at another huge cover-up like we've been experiencing for the last 50 years now.
Wow. Thank you, John.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Well, I'm telling you, this is mind-boggling. Chris from Queens.
Hi, Utrice.
Hello.
I'd like to say I was listening from the beginning, and I really want to take off my hat to the first caller and the second caller and the subsequent callers, because I think the first few callers, I think her name was Sarah, she made some excellent observations. If we can possibly put aside the horror of the innocent people who were hurt here, I know it's very hard to do that, but I agree with a lot of what was previously said, and there's a couple of quick points I want to make. The person who's, if anybody's listening, the one who called a couple of calls ago and he said the paper that was written, he's talking about the Project for a New American Century paper that was written and signed by Wolfowitz and Pearl. Remember that paper that was put out? You could get on the internet and see it. I mean, they wrote in there about how in order for America to change, there needed to be some world-changing event, and then we had 9/11. So that's what it was. It's the Project for a New American Century. I wanted to point something out because a couple of the previous callers mentioned 9/11. You know, when we see something, that is so grand in the sense of it's so big, I mean, as human beings, when I say we, I mean generally, we see something in the same way that we saw some of those children. We didn't actually see the children getting shot, but we have visuals, and they present these pictures, and the propaganda machine knows this very well. So when we see something, okay, all of our understanding or our truth at that moment is locked into the visual, okay? If someone were to describe it to you, for example, and you never, I mean, you, anyone, not having seen it, not having participated in the visual aspect of it, you would probably receive it a little differently and probably have more questions. But for some reason, when we see the horror of it, we stop right there. And this is what has happened with this one as well. I don't want to speculate as to whether these boys were involved. I tend to believe because of the testimony of one of the men who unfortunately lost his legs. He said that he actually looked in their face and he remembers them, so he's identified them. But there's a serious dark thing going on here that is beyond that. And that is that if you notice, if you go back to the Sandy Hook, before that, James Holmes. And even if you go back a couple of years ago to the one in Texas, I forgot his name, the military guy who actually grew up here, and I think his name was Hahn, and they crippled him. If you notice, every single one of these cases, the picture that has been painted of the entire case and the people that they want to demonize, now I'm not saying they're not guilty. When I say demonize, I mean the jury has already arrived at the decision, never having met in the room in the first place. So what they're doing is that they're painting a profile in a picture before it actually gets to you, the viewer, and you can actually ask questions. And there's a reason for this, because they want to continue this fear factor that has been in their mind, okay, eroding in the last 10, 11 years, because people are actually starting to question the Patriot Act. They don't like the fact that they get felt up every time they go to the airport, you know. And, I mean, it sounds sick and dark to say this, but I don't trust anything that this government tells us on the face of it. And I just think that people need to ask a lot more questions in spite of the horror that you think that you are witnessing. The Sandy Hook thing had many questions.
Well, we're coming close to the end. I wanted to get, there were so many other people waiting too. I think you've gotten your main point across, and thank you for it. This is really important. I'm blown away by the feelings, and this is a good idea that we have this program to exchange these views.
One last comment, very quickly. You know, they refuse to read this kid in the hospital now. They will not read him his Miranda rights.
Right.
Just think about that. That's all I want to say.
Thank you so much,
thank
Chris,
you.
From Queens. Albert from Brooklyn, the People's Democratic Republic of Brooklyn.
Good afternoon, Cecily. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Albert.
Well, I would like to congratulate the last call. At least she hit it on the nail. It's a fear factor that they're trying to impose upon the people over and over. But getting back to the incident in Boston, did you know that the FBI was following that gentleman 5 years ago?
Well, they said at least he was questioned at least 2, maybe 3 years ago, yes. But they determined that there was no big problem there. They were urged by the Russian authorities to question him closely, and they supposedly did and found that there was really no reason to be unduly concerned.
Yes, but the thing is, remember, at the time when the Russian requested it, they viewed him as a terrorist. He was part of a checking organization that was, they considered, terrorist. But based on the Patriot Act, that gentleman was supposed to be automatically behind bars based on their law, based on the Patriot Act. They did not view him as a terrorist because at the time, the people who come up with the law, where that woman was talking about the Pina group, they were claiming that the Chechens were freedom fighters. They were not terrorists.
Well, you know, we're going to get very detailed into this. Today is basically initial reaction day, and we will take all of these into greater detail as we proceed through the week. Thank you, Albert, for making that observation. Thank you. Warren from New Jersey. Are you there? Well, Ron from New York.
Okay, we always get this messed up. And since the last time you admonished me for not being a good advocate, I'm going to say...
Is this my... what was the word?
It was Ronnie, the limo driver, the last time.
The phrase that I was supposed to never forget.
That's me. Oligarchical collectivism.
There you go.
Yeah. But what I wanted to say quickly was that... once we get over this, we should not sleep on the big story, which is Jackie O's release of Jackie O's memoirs, which happens to indict one of the presidents for her husband's murder. Right? It just happens that those tapes happen to be at the Boston Library, but that's another thing. I think that we should look at that and not let all this get us off of that. So I just wanted to pass that out there, okay?
What is your initial reaction here to the Boston, the entire event, the entire week? What impresses you most? What do you think is the most important thing that we get from that?
I'm kind of prejudiced on the issue because when they told me about it, right, my first reaction was that it was staged. So I don't want to go any farther than that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Ron.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Well, I got a note from Donald who says, I get two things out of this. One, low tech can be just as effective as high tech. And 9/11, two planes brought this country to its knees. Two, I worked for the federal government, and it has proven its ineptness. So we seem to be having a consensus of opinion Is it because you're venting, or is it because you have reason to believe this? Is it something that is so deep-seated that you are not going to be too willing to part with what deeply resonates with you? What would it take to convince you that this was a real thing, just as we saw it and just as they said it? That in fact, two young men, for reasons yet to be known, decided to inflict unspeakable terror on an unsuspecting public, wreaking havoc with their lives and bringing a city to its knees. This is really very interesting in terms of, you know, where people are going with their opinions today. We will be exploring this in greater detail, of course. Today is just the day to get initial reaction. And we see that, you know, the government needs to pay attention to these kinds of things. The overwhelming sentiment, and this is just random calls, overwhelming sentiment, we have no one who has called today who believes otherwise. They believe that this is part of a larger conspiracy which we do not know anything about. They do not believe the government. They do not believe the facts as presented. And that is alarming. That is alarming. And we wonder, to what degree would a group like this factor into the government's determination to do a better job? What would the government have to do to be credible? Everybody's saying pretty much that the Obama administration is not credible. And it's not anything personally to do with Obama. It is just that it is maintaining the status quo of all administrations that have been studied in the immediate past. The record of consistently lying, the record of consistently misrepresenting to people what in fact has happened. This is huge. A huge credibility problem. When we proceed with this discussion this week, and really we're going to try very, very hard to get analytical about it, and many of you have gone there already today. But we see when we dissect this that there's so much that is wrong here, and we have a coming together. It's like a perfect storm of wrongness. It's a whole bunch of wrong things have gone on. And they all kind of attached to each other. You can't tear one piece away from the other because they're all in it. It's all mixed up. But you get the initial sense just the same, that instinctively you react by saying, I would have to reserve opinion until the government proves to be within some reasonable degree of credibility that it says what is the truth. I'm reserving my opinion. And in fact, I'm going with the demonstrated history of government's propensity to lie. I don't believe that the government is telling us the truth. That's what everybody said here today. I mean, I know you didn't call each other up and say, okay, let's call in the show and we're all going to voice the same views. But it is startling, to say the least, that we would have a uniformity of opinion that whatever is being presented to us is more than likely not true. And we have to reserve judgment, not just on the individuals who allegedly committed this crime, but more so on the government and its various arms, local in Boston and national at the federal level, and even as far up as the president. That there is a credibility problem. And people resent the idea of being once more dragged into a scenario where they're being lied to. That's very telling. And I want to thank you for sharing your opinions as frankly as you have and as openly as you have. And this is the reason we have this program, so that we can talk this way and share our thoughts and resonate with each other. Well, thank you so much. Of course, you may want to continue the conversation by emailing me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com, or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Utrice Lead. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. And we'll see each other tomorrow. Please tell somebody about this program, about PRN.FM. We need to grow the station. We need to grow all individual programs as well. And do remember, even if you can't listen at the same time that the program airs, it's available in the archives and you can download a podcast. And I know the feedback I've been getting is, but we want to participate. And yes, so I'll think of something that would work. All right. Thank you again so much. We'll see each other tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern. Bye-bye.